session 10:45. 10:35.
Okay, everybody ready? Mr. Limo.
Thank you. I spoke to the our people here, our nice people from Big Island, and so on the issue of the TBR, I explained to them that we assume the home is a non-conforming residence, predating 1964, as board member Ewan pointed out. I explained to them that it's a residence, single-family residence, it was home use. If you come in subsequent to that and change that use to a commercial use, transient vacation rental, you know, it then becomes something different than what it was originally intended for. Therein lies the reason why we're seeking a penalty for that. I talked to them about that, although they need to speak for themselves. My sense is that they don't have a problem with us going down that road. They don't have a problem, it appears, in filing an after-the-fact permit for the construction of the building. They do have a problem with the setback violation. I don't have a problem eliminating that. That could have been a bit of an overreaction on our part. We're just, you know, kind of trying to get through these things, and you know, it's just the way it kind of goes. On the fine for the construction of the home, I get it. They're saying the home is built on the same footprint as the original home. We told them to get a permit. They didn't pursue the big house, which we were told that they were going to build. That's why we told them to get a permit. They're making an argument about repairs and maintenance and building the same thing that was there and all that kind of stuff. At the end of the day, I'm interested in compliance. I'm not interested in people's money necessarily. So I can't say that I'd like to recommend not fining them for that, but I'm ambivalent about it, to be honest with you. I want to get, my main focus here is to execute our practice of fining people $15,000 for unauthorized TBR, and it's very evident that it has been a TBR for a long time. That video was from 2011. And so, you know, minimally, I need to get, you know, the $17,000 out of this. If you want to find them something for the construction of the home, that's up to you. I'm trying to get through this without getting into a contested case, so we can move on to, you know, deal with other cases that we have. So that's my 2 cents on the matter.
So you would recommend a minimum fine of $17,000, mainly based on the transient vacation rental, and be open to some fine or not on the building permit, and with the understanding that they would apply for a building permit now, I mean a CDUA,
yeah.
and nothing on the setback.
Because certain things can't be fixed. One thing that can't be fixed is the damage to our credibility and our rules and our practices of holding people accountable for doing TBRs. And so I want to be consistent on that. The house can be fixed, right? They need to file an after-the-fact permit.
Okay. I forgot. Does anybody else have any testimony? Okay. Somebody want to make a motion?
Well, I'll make a motion. I want to I'm more interested in the principal than in the amount of the fine. I do think that the reconstruction of the house was a violation based on the old house having lost more than 50% of its value by the time it was reconstructed. And I appreciate what Sam said about being willing to reduce the amount. I'm going to propose a $1,000 fine for the construction of the house without a CDUP, no fine for the setback. And on the question of the transient vacation rental, I'm going to propose a fine of $10,000, discounted because of the possibility that there is this argument that they had a legal transient vacation rental in the existing, the pre-existing non-conforming structure, and that they apply for a CDUP. I would make the time frame 180 days just to not make it, you know, because stuff happens. And with the understanding that the department is looking favorably toward not requiring an EA and no transient vacation rental in the future.
Okay. Is there a second to that?
Can you tell me what the total then would be of the fines and administrative?
Well, and then I forgot, I think the $2,000 for the administrative costs. So the
13,000.
Total fine would be $13,000.
I'll second that.
Okay. Discussion?
I'm wondering whether it's acceptable to counsel for the...
Yes, this is acceptable. We spoke with Mr. Lum outside, and you know, we appreciate the board and staff considering the issues that were presented today.
Thank you.
So the record should note that the recommendation of staff, the revised and the new motion would be acceptable to the applicant.
Well, staff had a $15,000.
Excuse me?
Staff had a $15,000.
Yeah, but it's
right, but
changed.
It's changed.
As modified by.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
So mm-hmm. It's 10 plus 2 plus 1.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Any other comments?
So I'll second the motion if that hasn't already.
Sorry,
second
already been seconded.
That's fine.
All right, thank you. Any other comments? All right, if not, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Arai, the next one.
Okay.
If they're going to ask for a deferral, I can let Tina explain to you why I'm not an attorney.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lum and I spoke outside. So for Mr. Arai, we are asking for a continuance of 30 days. The reason being that, you know, for his property, there is a conservation district use permit. It does have the transient vacation rental prohibition in his permit. However, Mr. Arai purchased the property in 2006, and I do have copies of his deed and his title policy. The conservation district use permit is not recorded against this property. He did not have notice of, you know, the permit or the condition. In January, we tendered this matter to his insurers and his and title as well. We're still waiting on responses from them. So to preserve his legal positions under his title policy and his home insurance, we need to ask for a continuance. Under those policies, you know, title and the insurers can appoint their own attorneys, and they often want to do so. So anything that we do here today, if we accept the matter for him or accept any fines, it'll damage his claims through his title insurance.
Counsel, are we continuing this or withdrawing it?
I thought we were deferring.
Are we deferring, withdrawing, or continuing this matter? Deferring. We're deferring.
Then you would bring it back at a later date.
Sure. Okay. And we are asking for 30 days, if possible.
I have no problem with that.
Sure.
I'll bring up one thing.
Okay.
Our rules say that if you're going to request a contested case hearing, it has to be by the close of the meeting at which it's considered.
Sure.
Not continued.
Right.
So the effect of this, I think, would be that you would not, if you had an unfavorable outcome from the board, that you would not be able to request a contested case hearing.
But if we are, that's
deferring,
why, okay,
yeah.
So can we just withdraw this item?
Yeah, you can withdraw it from the
So
agenda.
Let's withdraw it. Let's not act on it or consider it.
And, you know, even if we did request one, I mean, that if we weren't to get the continuance or the withdrawal, I think we would possibly have to request the contested case. But, again, anything that we do for him now could potentially harm his claims, you know, with his title of insurance and his insurers. So if we could get the withdrawal, I mean, that's
okay.
Preferable.
So I'm going to say we're withdrawing the item and not we're not hearing it today. We're only hearing the reasons why we're withdrawing it, but we're not considering the matter substantively.
That doesn't require a motion, right? We've withdrawn
yeah.
in the past.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
I, you know, but Barbara, I, you know, I don't want to be. I hate it when things get withdrawn and they never come back.
Sure. And Mr. Lemon and I spoke about that.
Okay.
Again, we're asking for 30 days, so we expect staff will reach out. Once we heard from title, I mean, if that's required, we can also reach out to DLNR. I do have copies of his warranty deed and the title policy. Not today, okay. And I would ask, you know, Mr. Lemon mentioned to me outside that you found a recorded copy of the permit. If I could please get that, because then we...
Okay, so we're withdrawing this item. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, K1.
Okay, this is once again an alleged unauthorized transportation by James Miles Hugh Wilson. This is at KED South Kona. It's a pretty, as far as I can tell, it's a pretty straightforward case, and although none of these generally are straightforward cases. Same thing with the county. We tried to get it registered with the county. The county kicked it over to us. In this case, we're recommending a $17,000 fine. $15,000 for the TVR, $2,000 for administrative expenses. And this one does have conditions in it that are prohibitive. CDUA HA2714 says that a single family dwelling shall not be used for rental or any other commercial purposes. It doesn't say TVR, but it says shall not be used for rental or any other commercial purposes. We subsequently added TVRs in the 2011 revisions. So that's it.
Okay. Questions. Did anybody have questions of staff, or should we hear from? Why don't we go ahead and hear from you,
okay.
And then we can ask.
Good morning, members of the board. My name is Megan Nordick. I'm counsel for the Wilson family. Be here today. We're not here to request a contested case hearing or prolong this matter. We're just here on behalf of the Wilson family to address the CCL's recommended fines and perhaps provide a little more context to the situation. And by way of background, the property is an old family property. The Wilsons are the Kamina descendants of the Greenwald coffee farmers. In the early 1990s, after their mother's passing, the father of the current owners built a home in her memory at one of her favorite locations. As stated in the staff's submittal, Dad did obtain all the requisite permits. The structure is fully permitted. A few years ago, Dad passed away, and it was passed down to the children who were unaware of these conditions. The property was in disrepair and needed. expenses and maintain the property, they decided that they would do short-term vacation rentals for a little bit of time to recoup the cost to repair the structure. And as part of this process, when the law was passed requiring short-term vacation rental permits, the Wilsons, they applied, and they applied for a permit. And it was at this time that they were notified that the property was located on conservation land and it contained these restrictions. The Wilsons immediately and voluntarily stopped all rentals, and they have been in compliance ever since. Subsequently, OCCL then issued fines, notably $15,000, which is the maximum amount, and this is a first violation of voluntary reporting. You know, they were trying to follow the law, and they were trying to get a permit to rent their house legally. We tried to speak with OCCL staff directly to resolve the amount of fines, and were informed that we should instead appear at today's meeting, which is why I'm here today. So the Wilson family respectfully disagrees with the amount of fines, and from a legal perspective, our firm does as well. We do not believe that the fines comport with the recent ICA decision in Dow versus Zoning Board of Appeals, which, among other things, it struck down the issuance of the maximum fine for the first violation, and stresses that agencies must issue fines that comport with their guidelines. So if we turn to the guidelines, which I believe are Exhibit 8 of the staff's submittal, specifically at Section 2 therein, which discusses the violation penalties and schedule guidelines, we can see that the purpose of the fines, as I think Sam alluded to earlier, is to ensure immediate compliance and cessation of illegal activities. Here that was done immediately, it was done voluntarily, it was done without the need for the issuance of any fines. And next, turning to how these fines are calculated, which is Section 2.1, they generally should be, based on my reading, calculated based on the harm to the resource. The conservation district, and we're trying to preserve the natural resources. Here, because the structure was fully authorized and permitted, we're not dealing with the clearing of land and building an unpermitted structure. The structure itself has been there for nearly 30 years. It's solely a use issue. Arguably, the vacation use is actually, you know, impacting the environment less than a residential use, because you don't have people there every day, and that was in fact the case. People weren't there every day. From our perspective, the harm was none. There was no harm to the environment. So with this context in mind, we request that the board, you know, deviate from the staff's recommended fines and significantly reduce the fine from $15,000 to somewhere in the $0 to $1,000 range, which is the penalty for a violation which causes very minor harm to the resource. And that's the lowest category. There it is. Ideally, we would kindly request that our clients not be fined at all. Again, this is a voluntary reporting, immediately stopped once they realized that they were not conforming with the laws and regulations. And lastly, in regards to the administrative expenses, we just wanted to point out that we think those should be reduced as well. This is not a case where there were complaints by neighbors and there was a lengthy investigation. Again, it was essentially self-reporting. The county handed over all the documents, which were in fact compiled by our clients, over to OCCL staff, and they simply followed up with a letter and their recommendations. So we would request that those administrative fines be reduced as well. Nothing further.
Take questions, board members.
When did the property start being rented as a transient vacation rental?
I don't know the exact date, but I believe that it would be less than a year on the market. It was only recently passed down, and there was a period of time where the children were, you know, trying to repair the property in hopes of keeping it in the family for a long time. It's actually been in the family for over 100 years, but it did need some repairs, and this was a way to enable them to cover the costs of those repairs.
Go ahead. Did I cut you off? I'm sorry.
No, well, and the one thing I wanted to point out is that the amount of the violation isn't, well, I guess, go ahead. I'll follow up if we go in that direction.
One of the exhibits in the staff submittal has this tax license, search tax license, and it says that the transient accommodations tax license, business start February 1, 2017. That sound about right?
It could be. It could be that's when they open the business. I don't know exactly.
So then we are talking
a couple of years.
Then they got a letter from HCCL in the end of 2019. Toward the end of 2019.
Correct, and that was in response to their application.
So this would be then 2.5 years of running a transient vacation rental on the property?
Four periods of time. As I previously stated, there was a period of time where they were doing work on the property, so I don't think it was always consistently used for that purpose. Further, I just think it's important to point out that the penalty policy, which is what the court really zeroed in Dow versus Zoning Board of Appeals, is that the agencies should issue fines that correspond to the penalty policies. And the policies themselves really hinge upon the harm to the resource. They're not looking at the amount of money somebody may or may not have made. Further to that point,
what court is that?
That's the Intermediate Court of Appeals. In Dow versus Zoning Board of Appeals, yeah, it was.
Can you give me the citation for that?
Yes, ma'am. It is, we'll have the CAP citation, CAAP-15-000565, and was decided on January 31st, 2019.
You don't have a Westlaw site for that?
I'm sorry, I don't have it.
Name of the first party?
The first party is Leland. L-E-L.
No, you said Al or Dow?
Yeah, that's the last name. So the full.
D-O-W?
D-A-O.
D-A-O.
The first name of the party is Leland H. Dow. Versus. So I think the point I was trying to make is that the fines should be measured based upon the harm to the environment, not based upon any alleged profit that could have been made. That's not a factor that is set forth that staff should be looking at or should be a consideration in the issuance of the fines. And here, just as a matter of fact, there was no profit. They were receiving income, but again, that was to offset the cost of repairs to the house. So they weren't walking away with millions of dollars.
That's still income.
You paid for your repairs. You know, counsel, by your logic, someone could make your $300 a night renting out this structure, and as long as the guests were nice people and didn't break any coral or throw beer bottles around, there's no harm to the resource, and we could have like a documentation of 1,000 days of violations.
That would be the exact burden to show.
$300,000 in income, $300,000 in income, and no fine should be levied. That's your position.
Yes, that's part of our position, and the other part is that this is the first offense. As soon as our clients realized that they were not in compliance with the law, they ceased renting voluntarily and immediately.
To me, To me, the issue is not so much damage, but inappropriate use of a conservation district. So, you know, you could have a very light footprint wedding on the beach and then argue that no harm was done, but it's an inappropriate commercial use of a conservation district. That's against the rules. And so I don't think that in this case, or in any cases in which you're trying to assess fines for inappropriate use, that you would necessarily be using damage to the resource. It would be a matter of whether or not the use that occurred on an area that was restricted was violated or not. So, but I do hear your thing on first offer.
With respect, I think that perhaps the guidelines should be updated to reflect that.
Oh, well, you know, if the guidelines are give the misimpression that it should only be by damage to resource, then that's one thing. But there are permitted uses and non-permitted uses of conservation or any other zoned lands, and violations of those are violations.
Correct, and it's just the measure of
mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I'd like to make a motion to go into executive so I can discuss the legal issue raised by this proceeding.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Reputation of making our lives
difficult. Well, yeah. I make your clients' lives. They'll probably tell me to come back and go.
You're familiar with the DAB decision, and Craig
no,
had briefed it. It's a DVP decision. So.
Oh, really?
It's, yeah, it's a TDR case, and they tried to assess fines for violation. The other issues in that case were that DVP did not have proper evidence of the violations, but one of the findings was that an agency must issue fines that correspond to their guidelines, even though they have discretion.
I see.
Agencies do.
Oh, okay, so it actually is related to a TDR case, so
mm-hmm.
that's why.
Yeah, take a look at it.
I will.
Yeah, I realized that this copy I printed off was before we gave it an official site, so we had the cap number.
So, Sam, what's the amendment policy revision?
I just want to. It says an OCCL.
This would be a board decision, which of these friends?
I mean, we could start to dig in down the deep things.
Okay. So, if this did pass, effective immediately, could that be a good news or bad news for these guys? Because they're already
I mean,
halfway through everything at this point.
You know that nothing's going to happen until, June probably in terms of legislation. So if it passed in
June, July.
Then, yeah, I mean, if it was immediate, then they wouldn't have to go to school. If I have the EA.
You'd have to write a waiver or anything. But you're not going to have to file with the old EA.
He mentions that way too often.
And way too loudly, too.
Yeah, and way too loudly, too. We are.
Okay, let's see. Are there any other board questions? Is there any public testimony on this? Okay, somebody want to make a motion?
I'm going to approve the staff's amendment.
Second.
All right, any further discussion? All right, if not, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you. Okay, we're going to do D3.
Good thing she said right after that she didn't intend to.
D3 is the after the fact renovation for a beach nourishment project. Couple things I wanted to mention. Preliminarily, the staff write-up indicates that we're claiming an exemption, but actually I was advised by council that this one has a CDUP, and so and a FONSI was fine.
You mean a DEA?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, a DEA, yeah. But no, they did a CDUP as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so OCCL has informed us that though when they took a look at the pictures, they seem to have, may have violated or at least gone beyond the scope of the emergency authorization. And I don't think OCCL is prepared to have a number of how much the fine will be, but they intend to proceed with a fine against the owner. I did ask them about the ROA, and they were okay with us proceeding with the ROA because ultimately the beach project will go forward, they have a permit for it. So, so I want to advise the board of that, and other than that, I don't have anything else to add. I don't understand a representative from Webby's Ocean is here as their representative.
Has the permittee been informed of the intention of pursuing a violation by OCCL?
Other than right now?
Yeah, we issued them a notice of violation.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure that you were already aware of that. So that as this right of entry goes forward, or you know, if we do that, it isn't viewed as a legitimization of anything, any actions that took place.
Yeah, and also, I was informed by Sam this morning. Apparently you still need a water quality permit or certification or something, so I think that means no work will be done until we get that authorization.
Okay, any other questions? Do you want to add anything or just answer questions?
Oh, well, in anticipation of that, are you okay with the staff's recommendation as stated?
Yes, Mike Foley with OceanEd.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we would absolutely be okay with approving the right of entry and our request for an easement at this time.
Okay.
And I'm here to answer any questions if the board has.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Any other public testimony? Not, is there a motion to approve D3 as submitted?
This is on Kauai. In lieu of second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right.
Hey.
You too.
Yeah.
Yay.
So let's see. It's all on the move up.
This is Kyle Watanabe. She is just joined us an assistant abstract. So we have everything.
Yay. Yay, thank you.
Awesome.
Welcome.
Welcome.
She comes from TG.
Oh, right on.
Yay.
Where did you start?
Too good.
Excellent. Okay, Russell.
Parks is really good.
don't have anything else on the rest of the agenda to add anything other than unless you have questions.
Okay, then let's just say, board members, do you have any questions on D 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8? I have one on D 1. No, just kidding. Okay, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Any questions? Any public testimony, including none? Is there a motion to approve?
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Also,
have
a nice long
weekend. Yay. State Parks?
State Parks.
Rick Gates, Board, St. Kim, Property Manager for Division of State Parks. This is to clean up a vacant 5-acre former base yard on Big Island. Oh. We're going to be giving it over to the county for implementation of a department master plan and part of a plan to roadway.
Okay, any questions? Members? No public testimony? Motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. You have a great long weekend.
Was it Monday or holiday?
Yeah.
Well.
It's, we're honoring our presidents. Our past ones.
Our past presidents.
Not the current.
Oh my gosh. He'll find a way to make it all about him, though.
To any staff watching, the room is empty, and we still need to hear from engineering, aquatic resources.
Move to defer all other.
Did we really finish all of the items?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
We got forestry.
You're going to get loaded on the 28th.
Mm. Thanks for the warning. Right to getting loaded?
No, that is the 28th and not today.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Hardy.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, what are we, which one are we doing?
Call whoever.
You got forestry, you got engineering.
I'll text Brian.
Okay.
Memorandum of understanding between Forest Service.
Administrator, Division of Aquatic Resources. This is agenda item F1, request for final approval to repeal Hawaii Admin Rule Title 13, Chapter 84 and 89, and to amend and compile HAR Title 13, Chapter 95, to update and consolidate rules regulating the take possession and sale of Samoan crab, Kona crab, and lobster. And I hand it over to our program manager, David Sakota, to answer any questions or talk about some of the public comments that we've received.
So I'll just summarize. The division held public hearings, and we got 8 testimonies. 7 were in full support. 1 testimony, which you can see, was just opposed to including that prohibition on the take of female Kona crabs in our rules. But the reason we're doing that is because we're transferring everything that's in statute into rules. And so we consider it a housekeeping amendment where it's not actually changing the substance of the law. There is a bill in session, House Bill 1075, that's moving forward that would repeal HRS 188-58.5. Which is that statute that prohibits the take of female Kona crab, Samoan crab, and lobster. And so we're in support of that, and our testimony has been at the ledge that we're incorporating those provisions into our rules, so we no longer need that statute.
Great.
So it's a good timing for this. Happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Thanks for the update.
Any questions? Chris?
So the comment on the female crabs was, you caught them, and if you die, you're supposed to throw them back.
Yeah.
And they're not going to make it.
Yeah.
What, do you have a response to that?
Yeah, so I think there were studies done outside of Hawaii that showed that the mortality after releasing them was really high. More recent studies have shown that that may not be the case. So there's no real solid data showing the actual mortality rate of released conic crabs. What we do know, actually what came out in some of the testimony from fishermen who showed up to these meetings, are that they realized that in deeper water, the crabs get predated on the way down. So they'll pull up their traps and then they'll keep the female crabs or the ones with eggs in a bucket. And then after they're done pulling up all the traps, they'll run the boat into shallower water and dump the females overboard to reduce predation. So it is an issue.
That might not be the best practice either.
Yeah, but
you know, moving something from one habitat to another, but
yeah,
something to work with.
But we've heard directly from fishermen that predation is an issue.
Yeah. So I haven't thought through how to handle it. It seems what the testifier is saying is there's a certain, I'm going to paraphrase it, but there's a certain market. And if you have to throw back the females, they're going to die anyway. Then you're going to catch more conic crabs to satisfy the market.
Yeah, or...
So you're sort of a lose-lose.
Yeah, and what's happened is a lot of the highline commercial conic crab fishermen have just stopped going because it's not worth their time.
Because they
because
have to throw back the females?
Yeah, because the amount that they can actually keep isn't worth like the cost of fuel and the effort to catch them.
What if you put them in the back, like if you lowered the trap with a... with whatever that keeps them from crawling out, like some kind, like a trap open and let them crawl out and lower it down, back down to the bottom. Wouldn't that work?
I think, I'm not a conic crab fisher, so I don't know the feasibility of that. I imagine something like that would work. But again, it's not so much that the conic crab's wasted. It's more the fact that if they can't retain them, end up throwing back like so many conic crabs that it's not economic for them to go out and actually go fishing for conic crabs, so they just don't go. And from the stock assessments, the stocks are healthy, so it can sustain a fishery for it. In other areas like Australia, they do allow take of males and females, but they regulate by season and size limits.
So, you guys are open to looking at this at some point in the future and just want to duplicate the statute for now?
Yes.
Yeah, so when we kind of start scoping meetings late spring or summer, for the conic, given that this bill goes through and we have the authority to change the conic crab rules, we hope to have discussions like this one with fishermen and other stakeholders to see maybe there is some alternatives for release, or maybe the harvest of females does make biological sense and economic sense. So I think the conversation could continue.
Is it a kind of half and half, like humans, like half male and half female crabs?
The ratio.
I think so. What studies have shown and what fishermen tell us, most of the times more females are caught. On like a smaller percent of the time, maybe like 5 or 10% of the trips they go on, it's like all males and hardly any females. And actually, some of our staff went out to do experimental fishing and they caught all males. And so we're thinking that's one of the anomalous times when just the males crawl into the traps. So in a broader population sense, I don't know the ratio.
If you have size limits, you're going to have the same predation issue, yeah? You still have to solve that problem.
Yeah.
But seasonal sounds like there's potential.
Yeah. So we do have seasonal closures right now.
And we're also looking at updating our lobster rules and taking a look at I mean, obviously the lobster industry in some places has tanked.
Yes.
Or not industry, but fish.
Fishery.
Yeah, and we do have statutory authority right now to do that.
So that's in the works.
Okay.
Well, I think what you're saying is, you know, given where we're at, is look at the rule later. Pass it now as it is, and get a good rule later.
Okay.
And I know you're thinking.
Okay. Any other questions? Not.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Aye. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Good work. Okay. Lots of you.
Yeah. Hey.
Okay. And then DOFA, anybody out there?
Move to defer.
Move to deny.
Oh, yeah. Oh. No, I like our.
Good morning, Chair. First. Board of Parties, Engineering Division. Item L1 is requesting that the board delegate authority to the chairperson and the chairperson designate certain powers and duties under Hawaii Administrative Rules, Chapter 13-19.1. So, just a little bit of history. As you know, we did a board briefing last meeting, and we kind of identified the role of the Dam Safety Program, and we also identified some of the duties and responsibilities of the board.
Yeah.
So the way the post-coloco in 2007, they revamped the dam safety law, which resulted in the Dam and Reservoir Safety Act of 2007, which was signed into the law and codified as Chapter 179D. Subsequently, we got the rules approved in 2012, which are codified as 13-190.1. However, the language in that statute basically authorizes the board to do essentially everything. You know? It says all dams and reservoirs in the state shall be under the jurisdiction of the board. And furthermore, it says the board shall administer the dam and reservoir safety program. So what this submittal is attempting to do is to clarify where the board should have powers versus where the department should have certain powers to carry out our day-to-day mission. So what we did was we went through the entire statute. We identified basically four items which we believe should be retained with the board. The remaining items we were requesting delegation to the chairperson or the chairperson designee, which would be the chief engineer. The way we did this was that we kind of looked at what the board should have a little more discretionary action. When it comes to issuing permits, when it comes to imposing liens on a property, any penalties and fines as a result of enforcement actions, and things like that. And there's another requirement for issuance of certificates of approval to impound. Whenever there's type of discretionary action, we felt those should rise to the level of board. The rest of the day-to-day conducting inspection on private property. You know, we enter private property all the time because we have to go there to do inspection of data. We don't think we need to come to the board to just go on and do our day-to-day duties. So we still feel that to do our job, we need certain authorities, but at the same time, we recognize that the board should retain certain powers when it comes to certain actions. So essentially, this is what the submittal is requesting. And Evan Matsuro, Dam Safety Section, is here to answer any questions as well.
I don't have a question, but I do have a brief comment and a request. Thank you for putting together the discussion. It was very easy to see, and because it was a relatively short piece, the items that were exceptions that the board should be involved in are all clustered nicely just before the recommendation. But I don't think I made this request of this division specifically, but I really like it when in the recommendation itself, the full text of all of the things, rather than referring to items above, because when it refers to items above, I don't know which specific sections above, but it says except as specified above, right? And unless I know exactly where in the body, and especially when it's like 30 pages of previous material, in this case it was not a problem because all of it is in a nice little section just before the recommendation. But in the future, I'd really like that clarification.
I agree.
Just to clarify, most of these things, or a lot of these things, your office has been doing without bringing it to the board in the past. And good. And, but I'm glad you're also bringing this so that I get a formal delegation.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd be scared if you had to wait 2 weeks for a board meeting to
exactly
some of these things that you're, and I'm glad you've operated under common sense so far, but it's good that you get this formalized, that these are the things delegated. I think you did a good job of separating out what you guys should do on the staff level and what you should bring to the board.
One more clarification to that. When we say we're going to bring penalties and fines to the board, we already have delegated authority to work through the CRVS, Civil Resource Violation System, which was already delegated by the board. So mm-hmm. the chair has full authority to implement fines via that route already.
My concern in looking at this is that the report that you gave the other day about the status, I would hope that if you take this action today that nonetheless, you would continue to provide annual or periodic reports on the status and state and condition of the various standards, that there's an overview reporting back to the board from time to time, notwithstanding the delegation to the chair.
What we can do is every year we're required to report to the legislature, 90s or something like that before, which identifies all the dams that are currently regulated. Sometimes it changes all the permits issued, all the penalties and violations that were issued during that prior fiscal year. So we can probably use that as the same mechanism to brief the board. Whether it be a board just forwarding it to you folks or do a public briefing again, that's something we can discuss.
In fact, it would probably make more sense from a timing standpoint, if we had the report before it got to the legislature, so that if the statute places the obligation on the board, we at least have some idea so that, for instance, you go to the legislature and then we find out after the fact would be backwards. But whatever is practical, that would be a good report that I would like the sense of the motion today that practice would continue.
After it's reviewed by the department and when we distribute that report out to the legislators and other, you'll probably be included, the board will definitely be included in that distribution.
That
would
be good.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, because I want to not second that, but I certainly agree with that. I really appreciated the briefing that we received in the previous meeting.
So, just to be clear, do you want the same report that the legislature gets, or do you want the report before the legislature gets it?
Whatever is practical. If we can get the same report that you get to the legislature, that would be helpful. Wouldn't duplicate any more work for you.
I think that's...
And if it could be issued even before the legislature...
It probably makes sense to give the board the briefing and then submit the report to the legislature.
Or if you don't
if,
have...
If can. I mean, at least do one or the other.
Yeah. Okay. So when you say briefing, you want a formal agenda item, or you just want a copy of the report before it's submitted to the
legislature? Whatever is practical for you, as long as we have notice of what it is that you're going to report to the board. If we don't have time for a board meeting, if we can at least get a copy of the report in advance, so that if there's any comeback, the board is advised what this department is doing.
I think that's the best route, is that maybe we go through an internal review before it's submitted outside, chair reviews it, and before it gets actually submitted, maybe after you review it, then it gets submitted to the board.
Yeah, if you have time.
Yeah.
For some reason we don't have time, then just go ahead and submit it and distribute it. But if you have time, do a board briefing before you submit.
If you have time for a board meeting, fine. But if not, if you're pressed because you got to go to the legislature, just a copy of the report would be fine in the interim.
Got it. Okay. Can do.
Great. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. If not, is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Thank you.
So far, thank you for coming. C1. Last item.
Is it?
Yep.
It's Valentine's Day.
We have things to do.
Still. David Smith, Administrator, Forestry and Wildlife. This is seeking approval for entering into a memorandum of understanding with the U.S. Forest Service and their Shared Stewardship Program. It's just sort of a general framework. We're trying to, it's something that came out of the Forest Service for the states to be able to message to Forest Service national leadership what's priority for the state and what we want assistance with from the Forest Service nationally. So they send people over to help us out with things and help us out with different programs. And so this is just an agreement that will allow us to work together on specific projects that are high priority. One of them is the biosecurity program and the biocontrol facility, tropical forests, and then the recreation programs. So we're looking to get help out of Forest Service. It helps them to communicate with their DC leadership as to what's important for the states and why they should justify sending people out here to help us out with taking programs.
Okay. Any questions?
Yeah, I mean, we already have a kind of a long-standing presence of Forest Service folks here.
Yep.
You know, they were part of the team for ROD and
yep.
all kinds of activities like that.
Oh, yeah, they are closely embedded with them on a number of projects.
Yeah, so this is kind of a neat formalization of that and then acknowledgement that we can take that relationship all the way up to the top of the Forest Service
yes.
to identify priorities. Cool.
Yeah, so, you know, the Secretary for Ag comes from a, you know, veterinary background. It's not necessarily that dialed in with some of the forestry stuff, and this is a way to help communicate to him that, you know, coming out of this administration, they're always saying, you know, support the states, you know, do what the states want, and so Forest Service is saying, tell us what you want. So it's if it comes from them, it doesn't get as much clout in D.C.
Mm.
as if it comes from us, like, hey, we really want help with this, and so it's a way to help them help us. At the Forest Service level, communicating further up the chain in the department and the administration.
Awesome.
Good.
Good.
I have a question. I think this is a reference to existing Hawaii Area Agency biosecurity, and there was one other thing. I gather these were protocols that are in place and in writing someplace.
Yeah, the biosecurity plan is already in place. There's some other things we already have going. We're working with them cooperatively to get a forest pathologist, which has been a high priority for us for a number of years. It'll be with IPIF, with the Forest Service here, with their research unit, but we just wanted that position in the islands, and so we've been working for a number of years. They put up 1 year of funding, we put up 1 year of funding. Ultimately, it'll end up being a Forest Service position, but it's something that's really important to help us out. So that's a good cooperative project. And then we're also working on a biocontrol facility that comes out of this biosecurity thing. So biocontrol as well, and that may end up being a federal facility, but it's still
awesome.
A priority for us. You know,
yeah.
We're working cooperatively with DLNR, Department of Agriculture, and USDA to come up with a facility that will serve all of our needs. So it's always kind of multi-agency. It doesn't really matter who it lands with, but that there's those resources are devoted to that particular purpose.
If you're interested in the details of those plans, there were links that were provided just before the Chapter 343 section and above the recommendation for both the Forest Action Plan and the Biosecurity Plan. So you can take you can click on those and read the plans in full.
Okay. All right. Motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
All right.
Meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Awesome.
Just in
yeah.
Only
yeah.
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 Make sure to eat the females while on board.
Yeah. Hey, go across the street, we're having a land legacy program celebration today with Capital.
Yeah.
They're having a whole bunch of the folks at projects that got funded are going to have booths, and they're going to be talking about the program.
Did you say they're going to have booze? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
All right.
Different tables with describing the program.
Awesome. Yeah. Oh, booths.
So,
booths.
You don't have to have a statue.
Look at that booth.
This way to formally say what our priorities for us, where we need this in. So you don't, it doesn't, there's no like statutory framework requirement. I mean, you just do an MOU.
For this?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, yeah. So it's pretty loose. It's just a way to contribute. Like, for instance,
it's the dialogue.
Meeting adjourned at 11:40.